All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvasesis and Nirvani Paskachyade Sitarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvudutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Laita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha. Today is July 15th, 2012 in Hilo, and we're doing a meditation to prepare for Janmashtami.
When is July?
I think it's in about 3 weeks. So I was asked to do a meditation for Janmashtami. Hey, and Devesha, children, you need to be sitting here watching. Okay, so come sit next to Johnny. Thank you. All right. So, the meditation here is going to be on the verse Janma Karma Tame Divyam Evam Yo Vegetat Twakta Deham Kunar Janma Naikimam Epi Sojuna. That if we understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance in this world, that we will attain to that nature. We will realize that we are also transcendental, non-material beings. This is, of course, the translation of that verse.
Janma karma cha me divyam evam.
Now you might recognize that voice. We made this recording to teach Bhagavad Gita verses to all of our
groups.
Yeah, that's right.
Janma karma cha me divyam.
Janma karma cha me divyam.
Evam yo veti tatvata.
Evam yo veti tatvata.
Chakva deham punarjanma.
Chakva deham punarjanma.
Naiti mameti sojuna.
Naiti mameti sojuna.
Of course, this verse is particularly. Wait, if I can turn this light up and down.
Sure.
So I can take out the hiss one. So the Sanskrit is interesting because janma means birth and karma means
activities.
So we think janma, that's something that a conditioned soul has. Karma, that's something that a conditioned soul has. But Krishna talks about himself, janma and karma. But then he says, chame divyam. These two things of mind, they're divyam. They're divine. And if you veti, if you know them, tatvataha, tatva means
truth,
if you actually know them. Twaktva deha. Twaktva is to give up. Deha is the body. Punar janma na iti. When you give up your body, you will not have to. Punar means again. Janma means birth. You will not have to take another birth. And what will happen? Mam eti sojuna. You will come to me. So, Srila Prabhupada often talks about this verse as being very simple. That if you can just understand that Krishna's activities, his appearance, his activities are not material, just that alone you would go to Krishna. Of course, we might think, well, that's very simple. But most people who study Krishna's activities don't understand at all that they're transcendental. I remember when I was visiting my mother, helping her to move into a nursing home, and she had me stay upstairs in the empty apartment of a friend of hers who was out of town. And he obviously had two sons, one who was some sort of a scholar, and one who was a lawyer. And the scholar's son had written a book, can't remember the name of the book, but it intrigued me. And as I was looking through it, it had a section on Krishna's Rasa-lila. And as I was reading it, the person obviously didn't understand that Krishna's janma and karma were divyam. So we may take it for granted, oh, that's easy. But manushyanam sahasreshu kastri jyadati siddhaye. Actually, there's very, very few people who understand that Krishna's appearance and activities are transcendental. All right, so we're going to start with the story. So here we have a situation where the people who are supposed to lead the world, who are supposed to be regulating the world, who are supposed to be protecting the world, were actually demoniac. And I think we have a very similar situation today. Right? That the so-called leaders are misleaders. In fact, I'd say that in remembered human history, we can hardly think of a time when that was not the case. It's hard to think of a time when the political leaders of the world, the kshatriyas, whether they were royalty and part of a progression of kings and queens, or whether they were elected, or whether they just assumed power as a dictator, were really guiding people towards transcendence. I mean, you'll find some countries today where the leaders say that they have a religious agenda. Some of the Muslim countries or Israel, some countries where they don't claim to be a secular state. But even there, we don't find that they're really leading people to transcendence and enlightenment, but rather they're leading people away from Krishna. Even to promote moral values, you know, even the governments today that claim to promote moral values, their systems are actually immoral and cruel. So this disturbs the planet, who's a person. So the modern scientists like to think that any concept of personality is primitive and childish. They tell us that if you're really sophisticated and intelligent, you'll think that cars don't have any drivers. So I remember we had a book in our Gurukul library many years ago about thunder and lightning. And it started, I'd never noticed this till my daughter pointed it out to me. But she said, Mata, on the first page here, it says something really interesting. And it said, the Native American people believed that such and such personality caused thunder and lightning. You know, the Nordic people imagined that Thor was striking his hammers. And they went through a whole list of different primitive people using words such like believed, imagined, right? And then they wrote, but today we know that lightning is simply electricity. But we still don't know what causes thunder and lightning. So after attributing the causes of thunder and lightning that were all personal to people who were ignorant and primitive and just had beliefs and imagination, they then admitted that they didn't know the causes either. And to think that everything is impersonal, I mean, that seems rather childish and illogical to me. And rather insulting also. So if we said, well, this building just, you know, it just appeared here and nobody cleans it. We just come and it's automatically clean. You know, and the food we're going to have later, just somehow it just shows up in the kitchen. You know, it would be an insult to all the people that are involved. We know in good management, you always acknowledge the sacrifices and the endeavor of the people involved. Even materialistic, atheistic people know that if you want to have a successful enterprise, you have to thank people, you have to acknowledge them, you have to give them some kind of recognition, or else people don't have any impetus to do anything. You certainly can't get up and just say, well, everything happens automatically, just by chance, just by machine, with no persons involved. So thinking that the earth is just a lump, you know, it's just a piece of dirt, it's just a piece of molten rock and etc. that's somehow or other spun off from the sun and some random, you know, there's a personality in charge of the earth who makes sure that things run properly. And she doesn't really like being treated like that. So here she is, Bhumi, who is of course Krishna's wife. And being a goddess, she's able to change her shape. I'm sure most of us would like to do that sometimes. And she's able, all the demigods can change their shapes. That was discussed when Bali Maharaj took over the heavenly planets, that the demigods all took different forms according to their desires and hid in various places in the universe. So she took the form of a cow and she went crying, and where did she go? She went to Brahma. So this is the standard operating procedure. You know, if there's something that's going wrong and you can't handle it yourself, you go to your authority. You go to the next higher up. So she goes to Brahma, and she takes the form of a cow, because civilized personalities have sympathy for cows. They see cows as innocent animals. So she comes to Brahma as a cow, and she's begging, please help me. The rulers are all demoniac. Now, of course, Bhumi can do some things on her own. She can do some things like withholding opulences, just like a mother would do from a naughty child. Right? Your children, if your children are hitting each other over the head with their toys, you take their toys away. Bhumi also does that. But here she's feeling herself insufficient, so she goes to higher authority. And many times we feel ourselves insufficient, isn't it? We feel that the cruel and exploitive influences in our life are more than we can handle. And then we have to go to our higher authorities. So Lord Brahma knows that whenever this problem happens, that he can call on the Lord.
Yada yada hi dharmasya granir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam shujamyaham. Yada yada hi dharmasya granir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya
So in the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada talks about that Krishna will appear personally, and sometimes he'll send, he says, his son or his representative. So we should not be surprised in this world that Dharma doesn't stay pure for very long. Dharma very quickly becomes a Dharma. I mean, even just shortly after Mahaprabhu's leaving the world, it wasn't that many years later that Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw that Gaudiya Vaishnavism had become corrupted and again needed to be purified. So this is a process that has to go on and on and on. It's something like cleaning your house or washing your body or washing your clothes or washing your dishes. It has to be done over and over again. You can't say, well, I've cleaned my house and now it's clean. You know, a year from now, it's going to be clean. But it's something you have to keep doing. So this, when those of us who are supposed to be, trying to be, aspiring to be, hoping to be representatives of Krishna, we have to also be willing to go through a continual cleansing process, both of ourselves and our sanghas. It's not that, okay, it's done. You know, where some great personality comes and they purify things, okay, now it's done, now it's set. No, it has to keep being done again and again and again and again. And if we're not willing to go through that process, then things become degraded. They do. Organizations become stymied. They become bureaucratic. They become materialistic. Very quickly. It doesn't take very long for things to become corrupted and polluted. So Krishna's coming again and again. Yada, yada. He's coming again and again and again. And his representatives have to do it again and again and again. And when there's ultimately, when there's difficulty, we need to go to the Lord. So if we have some difficulty, we go to our authorities. If that doesn't work, we go to their authorities. That doesn't work, we go to their authorities. That doesn't work, ultimately, we also go to Krishna. Krishna, there's adharma. Please rectify the adharma. So the demigods then prayed to the Lord, reciting the Purusha Shukta prayer. So this is the general etiquette when you want to talk to the Lord. First you praise him with prayers, and then you give your submission of what you want. We find this in the Bhagavatam with Arjuna when the Brahmastra was coming. And Arjuna wanted to ask Krishna how to counteract it. First he offered prayers. You know, you might think the Brahmastra is coming to say help. Now, of course, in Vrindavan, sometimes they just say help. Like when Indra's pouring the rain, they just, Govinda, please save us. But generally, the etiquette is first you offer prayers. So here we have the Purusha Sukta and the translations. This is not the whole thing, but selected verses.
Om Sahasra Jira Dharu Dhaha Sahasra
I really like this one where it says he extended beyond by 10 fingers. You know, the Krishna creates something then expands and expands and expands. So this course deals with the idea of the limited and the unlimited. So this verse talks about how Krishna has manifested the universe so we can enjoy material fruits. So this is, of course, the kindness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That although we want to, what material fruits means, it means something in opposition to our own nature. But yet Krishna manifests the universe to facilitate those desires of ours. So this is what we often hear, that the material creation is considered to be one quarter. Although it's one sense you can't talk about these things in mathematical terms, because if the spiritual world is unlimited, how can you have a quarter of unlimited? But for the sake of our understanding. So this is an interesting verse, that the Lord himself has taken the form of everything. This reminds us of Maya Tathamidam Sarvam Jagadavyakti Murti Nalat Sani Sarvabhutani Natahamte Suvastita, or the concept of Sarva Kalamidam Brahma, that in one sense everything is nothing but Krishna. And here we're talking about the creation within the universe, producing the planets, producing all the different bodies which we inhabit in our transmigration. This we hear very often, how the different persons in the world, they represent the different parts of the body of the Lord. And in that sense, everyone has a part to play, right? The Brahmanas, what do the Brahmanas protect? The Vaishyas protect cows. The Vaishyas protect cows and natural resources. Thank you, Karika. And what do the Brahmanas protect?
Truth.
Truth. Yes, truth and philosophy. And the Kshatriyas, they protect?
Humans.
People. And the Shudras, they protect?
Arts.
The arts and the skills. So these are some of the wonderful meditations where we can see the transcendence even in the mundane. That if one's not at the point where they can think of Krishna just playing his flute by the bank of the Yamuna, you can at least think of the Lord in terms of like the sun and the moon and the wind. All right, now this often happens, doesn't it? We pray to Krishna and we don't hear any response. We say, okay, you know, why isn't he answering? Of course, this is one of the descriptions of the Lord as all honorable, given by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that the demigods are coming to see the Lord, and the Lord's servant is telling them to wait. And even says, Indra, stop offering your prayers, you're creating a disturbance, Vayu, Krishna can't see you today, please go home. So how do we know that somebody is an exalted personality, they can make us wait, isn't it? That's how you can tell somebody has higher status. So Krishna is not obliged to respond immediately, nor is he obliged to respond at all, nor is he obliged to respond necessarily in the way that we would demand it. A part of our process of surrender is accepting that Krishna is the decider. He's the Purusha. He's the one in charge. You know, I can make requests, but I cannot make demands. Even on the level of the gopis, Krishna leaves them in the Rasalila, and they're praying to him, and they're calling for him, and he does not immediately respond, nor does he immediately reappear. He comes in his own time, in his own way. He's independent. In fact, if Krishna weren't independent, he wouldn't be very attractive. That's one of the opulences, is being renounced. Someone who may be beautiful and rich, if they're attached, they're not very attractive. And I'm sure we've had instances in our life where people who were just yes people to us, and it's not very attractive. You want to deal with people who have their own will and their own personality, as Krishna wants to deal with those who are like them. So the demigods didn't hear anything, and then Brahma heard the Lord from within his heart. He said, yes, I will come and fix this, and you should also come. You should come to help me. So this is man proposes and God disposes. Krishna doesn't say to Arjuna, go to sleep on the chariot and I'll fight for you. Lord Ramachandra doesn't say to the monkeys, just stay here eating fruits and I'll go rescue my wife myself. The devotees are enthusiastic to do service. They're very active. In Goloka Vrindavan and Vaikuntha, the residents are very active, even though there's nothing to accomplish. I mean, here there's a lot to accomplish because if we don't work hard, we don't eat. Krishna has designed it so a material body needs a very frequent supply of food, which forces us to work. So in our spiritual body, that's not the case. And yet, there's always activities in service and in love, not laziness. So Krishna is saying, okay, I'm going, but you also go. You also be part of the pastime. Now, of course, the difference here is that work in material consciousness is miserable, and work in spiritual consciousness is not work, it's play. We have the word lila or krita. Krita means to play, like children play. And lila Prabhupada usually translates as pastimes. So we talk about pastimes, we mean things like football and baseball. And right? What is the use of football and baseball? Does it have any use?
Exercise.
But you could get exercise without some organized, complicated sport.
It's money. Competition.
Money. Well, there's money involved, but pleasure. Maybe it's just pleasure. It doesn't have any particular purpose. It's not like growing food or transporting food or making clothes or building homes. It's called a pastime. It's called a sport. Right? Something that you're sporting. You're playing. So in the spiritual world, everything is a sport. Everything is play. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur so nicely in Jivadharma talks about how that this material world is also one of the sports of the Lord. And if we are involved in our activities in this world, in that consciousness, then we will not suffer. So the demigods are advised to join the Lord's lila. And we can also join the Lord's lila. We shouldn't think... Hikari, can we take some more water? We shouldn't think, oh, well, Krishna's not on this planet, so I can't join in the lila. No, Mahaprabhu is here. And the deities are here. Krishna's here in his holy name.
Parichranaya sadhunam jinashaya chatuskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Parichranaya sadhunam
jinashaya
chatuskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge.
So soon after the Lord gives this instruction, King Kamsa was taking Devaki to the home of Vasudeva, her husband. And Kamsa was one of these demoniac rulers. As he was taking them, a voice came from the sky. Kamsa, you're a fool! The eighth child of your sister that you are taking will kill you. So then Kamsa grabbed Devaki's hair and was about to immediately cut off her head with his sword. So then Vasudeva was explaining to Kamsa, listen, everyone's going to die. It's quite interesting, you know, we may think that we are very surrendered to the concept that we're going to die and very accepting that we're going to die, but when it's right in front of you, it's a little different, isn't it? You know, you might think, sure, you know, I'm not afraid of death, no problem, just a change of clothes, I'm an eternal being, death is only for the body. But then if the doctor tells you you have cancer, you know, or some astrologer looks at your chart and say, okay, 2016, you're probably going to die. All of a sudden you go, is there anything I can do about it? Is there any treatment I can take? Is there any counteraction? All right, so Kamsa here, he being a demon, he was willing to kill somebody else to save himself. In fact, he was willing to kill many people to save himself. So Vasudeva preached to him for quite some time, everyone's going to die, and actually there really isn't any death, you're eternal, and it didn't work. You ever have that? You try to give somebody good philosophical advice when they're in distress, and they can't hear you. So Kamsa was in so much distress, he was very, actually, what was he very what? He was very afraid. So all materialistic people are living in a state of fear, because all the sources of their happiness are temporary. So, you know, they may be a big guy and ruling everything and bossing everybody around, but actually they're full of fear. So he was so frightened that he couldn't hear anything. And you see, he's angry. By the way, we notice that anger and fear are very connected. Krishna talks twice in the Gita about attachment, fear, and anger. When you're attached to something, you're afraid about losing it, and when you're afraid about when your attachment is threatened, that fear will often manifest as anger. Anger is also called the younger brother of lust. So again, when our attachment is threatened, we become angry. And if we notice, most of the time we're angry, it's because we're worried about something. And when you're angry, it's very hard to hear any good instruction. It's hard to hear anything. So Kamsa couldn't hear anything. Finally, Vasudeva said, listen, I'll give you all the children. Now he found some way of negotiating. He was thinking, well, who knows, maybe we won't have children. At least let me save Devaki right now. I'll worry about the future later. And if the eighth child's going to kill Kamsa, it's just going to happen. Doesn't matter what I do. He had that faith that whatever I do, Krishna's plans are going to happen. And this is such a wonderful quote. A saintly person can tolerate all kinds of miserable conditions of life. A learned man can discharge his duties without awaiting favorable circumstances. A heinous person like Kamsa can act in any sinful way. And a devotee can sacrifice everything to satisfy Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, to discharge our duties without awaiting favorable circumstances. Often we think, first I've got to make my circumstances favorable, then I can become Krishna conscious. Then I can do my duties. But actually, even a learned person, less than a devotee, a learned person, can discharge their duties, as Krishna says, being detached from auspicious or inauspicious. All right, so Vasudeva was very truthful. Generally, if you tell somebody you're going to give them all your children, you're going to think of a way to get out of it. well, let me just say it for now and later I'll cheat. But Vasudeva wasn't like that. He actually took his first child to Kamsa, and first Kamsa said, oh, I don't need this child. I appreciate your truthfulness, but I'm only in danger from the eighth child. You can take him home. And of course, Vasudeva didn't trust Kamsa, somebody who's very materialistic and very attached. They don't have stable good qualities. Their good qualities only exist when it suits their purposes, and when it doesn't suit their purposes, they'll display bad qualities. Then, of course, Narada told Kamsa, listen, Kamsa, in your past life, you were Kalanimi. You were fighting on the shore of the ocean of milk on behalf of the demons, and Lord Vishnu came and killed you. And now again, you're an enemy of Vishnu. Again, he's going to kill you. And not only has he come, but in preparation for his coming, all of the demigods have come. And the members of these dynasties, like the Vrishti dynasties, the Yadu dynasties, they're all the devas. They're all your enemies. So Kamsa thought very much in terms of friends and enemies. These are people who are helping me, they're my friends. These are people who are not helping me, they're my enemies. So immediately he imprisoned his father, Ugrasena, took over the kingdom, and imprisoned Vasudeva and Devaki. Now this is quite an interesting concept. And I'm going to read here. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.8. And this is Srila Prabhupada quoting the purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says, a pure devotee is always transcendentally situated because of executing 9 different processes of bhakti yoga, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, padasevanam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakyam, atmanivedanam. Thus situated in devotional service, a devotee, although in the material world, is not in the material world. Yet a devotee always fears. So a devotee has a fear also. We say the devotee is fearless. We say one of the first qualities of the divine given in 16th chapter by Bhagavad Gita is fearlessness. But there's one thing the devotee's afraid of. And it's actually exactly what Winston Churchill said. The only thing to fear is fear itself. What is the state of fear? The state of fear is forgetting Krishna. So the devotee is afraid of forgetting Krishna, which brings you fear. Does that make sense to everybody? They're afraid of being in fearfulness. They don't want to be in fearfulness. They don't want to lose their peacefulness. They don't want to be in a situation where they're again seeing the duality of friends and enemies. Yet a devotee always fears, because I am associated with the material world, so many contaminations affect me. Therefore, he is always alert in fear, which gradually diminishes his material association. Symbolically, Mother Devaki's constant fear of Kamsa was purifying her. A pure devotee should always fear material association. And in this way, all the asuras of material association will be killed, as the sadgarbhasuras were killed by Kamsa. It is said that from the mind, Marichi appears. In other words, Marichi is an incarnation of the mind. Marichi has 6 sons. What are his sons? What are the sons of the mind?
Love, growth,
anger, fear.
Yes,
Asarya.
Okay. Yes?
Illusion.
We missed moha. Kam, Krodha, Lobha,
and Mada.
Okay, what's Kama? It is?
Lust.
Krodha?
Anger.
Lobha?
Greed.
Moha?
Illusion.
Mada?
Madness.
And Matsarya?
Envy.
So this is what the mind is full of. These are what's churning in our mind. The Supreme Personality of God, it appears in pure devotional service. So if we want to destroy these things in our mind, we have to be afraid of material association. This is confirmed in the Vedas, Bhaktir Evainam Darshati. Only bhakti can bring one in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared from the womb of Devaki, and therefore Devaki symbolically represents bhakti. And Kamsa symbolically represents material fear. When a pure devotee always fears material association, his real position of bhakti is manifested, and he naturally becomes uninterested in material enjoyments. When the 6 sons of Marichi are killed by such fear, and when is free from material contamination, within the womb of bhakti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. Thus, the 7th pregnancy of Devaki signifies the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After the 6 sons, Kam, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya are killed, the Sesha incarnation creates a suitable situation for the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, when one awakens his natural Krishna consciousness, Lord Krishna appears. This is the explanation given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So if we are afraid of material association, then that's our key to getting rid of these problems. Would we all like to get rid of being controlled by anger?
Yes.
And lust, and madness, and envy? So to be afraid, to be hesitant to enter into materialistic association, to think of it like somebody who has a very contagious disease. You know, if you know that somebody's got, what is that, Ebola? That disease they have in Africa where if you, like, come anywhere close to the person, you're probably going to die. So I remember a long time ago, very long time ago. Must have been a really long time ago because it was a black and white film. I can't remember the name of it. But it was about these health workers who were working in some area where there was a contagious disease. And, you know, they're putting on all this protective gear all the time. But they're working long hours, and they're trying to save the patients. They're under a lot of stress. And in the film one time, one of the nurses just unconsciously picked up a cup of water from the patient, from the table next to the patient's bed, and drank it. And all of a sudden went, oh. And you see the doctors kind of back away from her. And, okay, now we're going to have to put you in quarantine. So to have that level of fear of material contamination. And then all these things within the mind will be destroyed. I don't know where I got this from. I didn't make it. Pretty good. And then, when those are destroyed, then the personality of Godhead Sesha, Balaram, comes. Of course, Balaram is the original guru who prepares the way. It's Balaram who is actually the manifestation of the spiritual world, the paraphernalia of the Lord, the throne of the Lord. So when everything's cleansed, when by material fear all of our madness and illusion and lust is cleansed, then Guru can actually help us to make a suitable place for the Lord to manifest. Then Yogamaya transfers Balaram to Rohini, enters the womb of Yasoda. Then Krishna enters the mind of Vasudeva, and from there enters the mind and the womb of Devaki. It's explained that this was a kind of initiation, at which point Devaki looked very beautiful. There was peace and prosperity. This is what happens in our own life when we destroy these six enemies through fear of material association, and Guru and Krishna can then manifest in our heart. There was peace and prosperity everywhere, and within the minds of everyone, there were signs of good fortune. The rivers were full, and lakes were decorated with lotus flowers. Birds began to sing with sweet voices. The wind carried the aroma of different flowers, and the sensation of bodily touch was pleasing. The Brahmanas' minds became full of joy because they could hear the transcendental vibrations in the sky proclaiming the appearance of the Supreme Personality of God. Then Krishna appeared, and he appeared in a Vishnu form with four arms, fully decorated within the prison of Kamsa.
That's a baby.
Vishnu.
That's a
baby. Baby Vishnu. Then Vasudeva and Devaki offered prayers. So although they're Krishna's mother and father, they saw him as the Lord. And they offered prayers glorifying him, but then they also said, we're really scared that you might get killed. So this is the interesting mood of Vasudeva and Devaki, that on the one hand, they're aware of the opulence and position of their child, and on the other hand, they still think of him as their child. And they say, you're going to get killed. It's really interesting because they were told that Krishna was going to kill Kamsa. So you would think that when he appears, they'd say to him, okay, great, here you are, go for it. Kamsa's about to come, finish him off. And I'm sure we've all thought about the fact that, you know, there's all this time lapse. Bhumi goes to Brahma, Brahma goes to Vishnu, Vishnu says, I'm going to incarnate, first all you people have to come. So first Krishna's parents have to appear, and they have to grow up. Right? And then Krishna's coming as the eighth child, not the first child, so 8 years go by. And then Krishna appears, and then he still doesn't kill Kamsa. But he goes to Vrindavan. So there's a long wait for Krishna to come. But the devotees' mood here is that, Krishna, we're concerned for your safety. Not, oh, now that you're here, please kill Kamsa for our safety, but we're concerned for your safety. So that's the mood of love of the devotees. And then we have, of course, it was a storm, and it was the rainy season, the river was full, the rain was pouring. And we shouldn't think that I become a devotee of Krishna and everything's just going to be like a sunny day at the beach. Now there's going to be sacrifice. There's going to be adventure. There's going to be struggle. But again, it's all sport. It's not work. When we think of adventure and struggle and difficulty in this world, we think, oh, work. But it's sport. So just like people will voluntarily play a game of sport where there's competition and there's difficulty because it's fun. But this is the mood. So Vasudeva is undergoing difficulty for the sake of his love for Krishna. Let's go back here for a minute. I like this too because Krishna is very secretive. You know, he sneaks off in the middle of the night to Vrindavan. He likes these kind of secretive, sneaky, behind-the-scenes sort of stuff. And again, he's very playful. Krishna's very, very playful. All right, so now Kamsa comes to see Devaki. He's told the child is born. And Devaki says, I've had a girl. You're not supposed to be killed by any girl. And when she grows up, she can marry your son. But please let me have her as a gift. So Devaki, even knowing that her own child is safe across the river, she's begging for the life of Yasoda's daughter. But Kamsa, again, being very much afraid, was not very rational. And he says, I'm going to kill this child anyway. So when he goes to do so, she appears as Durga. And as a demon, he was particularly impressed with Durga. And she said, the child who is going to kill you has already been born elsewhere. Don't be so cruel to your poor sister. And then, of course, Krishna was elsewhere. He was in Vrindavan, where Nanda and Yasoda, who don't have this reverential mood of Vasudeva and Devaki, they were simply thinking of Krishna as their beloved child. And they were enchanted, just like ordinary parents are enchanted by their child's activities. So we could just imagine the millions and millions and millions of times more enchanting that Krishna is as this little child carrying his father's slippers. Oops, sorry.
Yada yada.
This picture illustrates very much our modern society. And Krishna now has incarnated specifically as? Nam. Right? In Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, in japa, in book distribution. This is our yoga for the present age. So this is our little good teacher summary. To flee materialistic association and therefore conquer lust, greed, envy, illusion, madness, and anger. To get spiritual strength from Guru. And then in the pure consciousness of goodness, the Vasudeva consciousness, bhakti manifests, and then Krishna actually appears. I don't know how to do that. Someone else did that for me. So I hope you like this presentation. Lights? That's in Hungary at New Vrindavan. At New Vrindavan in Hungary, at the farm. It's New Vrindavan. Right, that's our eco farm in Hungary. The devotees are self-sufficient for food except for rice and except for festivals. So they grow everything they need except for rice, and the only time they have to get food is when there's a festival, and they have to feed a lot more people. And we have a lot of scholars who come there and study the farm and write papers about ecological living.
How many devotees are there?
About 150.
100. Who's in charge there?
Shivaram Maharaj. And then there's also a lot of people in the nearby village. So there's a growing community in the village.
Isn't there another group
that's helping? There's somebody raising their hand in the back.
Yes.
How long is the millennium?
Well,
Krishna comes every millennium.
I don't think you can use millennium because millennium comes from the Latin for mil or thousand. Mm-hmm. So I understand millennium as a very approximate kind of translation for yuga. So the yugas are really an age, and each age has a different length of time. So like our present age is 432,000 years, which is a lot more than a millennium. So Krishna appears every yuga, but he also has many incarnations within the yuga. So when the list of incarnations are given, there's all the Manvantaravatars, and there's this a lot more than just one main yuga avatar. There's yuga avatars, there's lila avatars, there's Manvantaravatars. And then, of course, there's also the great saintly persons who can be considered in one sense avatars, although they're not Krishna. They're coming as Krishna's representative for the same essential purpose. Although there's certainly times, there's one letter Srila Prabhupada was asked about gaps in the parampara, and he said that from the point of view of universal time, those gaps are not very long. And I thought, well, okay, but if you're on the earth at that time, it might seem like a pretty long time. So there may be some times when there's nobody available. I mean, we shouldn't assume that there's always going to be some incarnation or some pure representative on the planet at a particular time, and sometimes there's gaps. Somebody else? Yes.
A lot of the community are aware of this, but because I bring it up almost every generation.
But you just want to make sure, in case there's somebody who just wasn't here all the other times.
Vasudeva then saw the newborn child, who had very wonderful lotus-like eyes, and the boar in his four hands, the four weapons, Shankha, Chakra, Gadha, Padma, Prabhupada, and the purport. When a child, no ordinary child in human society has ever been born with four hands. And when is there a child born with fully grown hair? So the Vishnu form, are you still there?
Yes.
The Vishnu form is a baby form.
Is a baby form.
It's not, the painting is misleading. I don't know where it came from, but if they're looking at an 11-foot Vishnu form, like you said, they'd be going, oh, let's go send for Kamsa, you know?
Well, I understand that sometimes the pictures that are drawn are also symbolically representing a concept rather than accurately depicting a particular lila. Just like the painting that I showed you of the drawing of sinful activities and the Lord appearing. So that's a symbolic painting. So I understood it like that. But thank you.
Yeah, in underground you'll see the real painting. If you ever go up to the temple there, it's up on the side of the temple.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Yes?
No? I'm sorry, I don't know the number of the verse that you're quoting from Bhagavad
Gita. Which one?
One understands my transcendental appearances.
Janma Karma Jami Divyam, that's 4...
10 or 16 or... Mm-hmm.
4.9, I think. 4.9. Is it 4.9? Do you know, Gopa? Mm-hmm. I think it's 4.9.
Thank you.
I think the other two, Hidayah, Dahi, Dharma, Sharam, Purichan, Naya, Sardin, number 7 and 8. Do you remember, Jenna? Yeah. 4.9. Anybody else?
Other than Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation for the first 6 sons, I always had a problem with Narada making trouble for Devaki and Vasudeva. and the story I got years ago was to speed up the whole Leela. But as you mentioned the other day in the class, to Krishna, what the 19 years to get the concept.
What?
19 years to get to Kamsa from the voice in the sky, until Kamsa's death.
The years.
You're looking at like 16 to 19 years.
16 to 19 years.
That's just to get to Kamsa. It took him another 100 years to get to Jarasandha.
Right, that's right. Kamsa's father-in-law. And then that's not even counting, you know, Bhumi's original complaint. And then you have to have the appearance of all the elders first. So first, you know, the Lord sends down the elders to appear. So first,
so
Vasudeva and Devaki.
What's his motive?
Yeah, I don't know, you have to talk to him. I haven't talked to him for a few days, you know, I don't know. Narada is, I mean, Vaishnavas in general are inscrutable, but Narada seems particularly so.
Yeah, it's a real mystery.
Also, if you look at the end result of everything Narada does, it always acts not just to speed up, but to intensify the Leela. Look at
everything
in Krishna Leela or otherwise. The end result is always intensification.
Well, Krishna does a lot of things for that purpose also. So Krishna will often do things that appear to be opposite of what you would expect. And his reason given for that is to intensify. And if you think about what we consider enjoyable, even materially, I mean, we do like just peace sometimes. Sometimes we want to just sit on the beach and look at the waves and do nothing and just have peace. But we don't really want to do that for very long. You know, so the people who are sitting on the beach and looking at the waves, then they go back to their hotel room and they turn on a movie of people shooting each other. Where they don't have any peace anymore. Is it?
Not like that.
Right? Or they go to some party where things are, they do something where there's some intensity of emotion. So what's really nice, of course, about Krishna Leela is you have both peace and excitement together. So in this world, we generally have one or the other. You know, when you're peaceful, it's because there's nothing exciting going on. You can't be watching some shoot-em-up movie and be peaceful. But with Krishna's pastimes, they're above peace. Peace is like an intermediate platform. So everyone who is engaging in Krishna's leela, they've already realized they're not this body. They've already realized they're not going to die, that they can't be hurt. They already realize that they're infallible beings. So they're already on a platform. And they already know Krishna's always going to protect them and Krishna's always going to maintain them. They're already on that platform. So they already have perfect peace. So they're engaging in these adventures and these intensity of emotions while at the same time having perfect peace. And I think our imitation of that, I think, is when people watch dramas and movies and things like that, where you're safely sitting in your seat in the theater. I really noticed it one time seeing an advertisement for a movie up in New York on a billboard. It said, some movie, it said, the closest you can get to murder and still walk away. This movie is the closest you can get to murder and still walk away. And then I thought, oh, they're trying to get excitement and peace at the same time. They want to sit in the theater. You know, I'm sitting in the theater. I'm safe. Nothing's going to happen to me. And yet you're experiencing these emotions and a good, you know, we've studied drama in our Gurukula. We studied Vedic drama. We use Tamal Krishna Maharaj's translation in his book, Jagannath Priya Natakam, to study all the varieties of Vedic drama. And then we also use those to analyze some of Shakespeare's plays. And then we use them to write our own plays. So there's all the good playwrights and directors. They take you to some intensity of feeling. Whether it's a comedy, whether it's a romance, whether it's a tragedy, whether it's an adventure. They're trying to intensify your emotions. Because that's pleasure. You know, if we read the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you'll see all these intensities of emotions. We read the activities of the residents of Vrindavan. So that's what's pleasurable. And at the same time, they're peaceful. At the same time, they know Krishna's always going to win. You know, while they're worried that Krishna's in Kali's coils and they're thinking he's going to die, they still also know Krishna's always going to win. And they know I'm eternal. That's there. That's that platform of peace. That's just liberation. They're far, far, far above liberation. So yeah, I like that point, that what Narada Muni does, what Krishna does, what the devotees do, they do things to make it more and more and more and more and more intense, to bring the feelings of the devotees to a point where they practically can't even take it anymore. You know, where they enter into a kind of transcendental madness. So this is the beauty of a personal philosophy, that we are saying that the ultimate reality, the ultimate lila, is one of expression, of emotion, of intensity, of excitement, of adventure, that's transcendental to just ordinary peace. Not like our adventure in this world, where we have to sacrifice our peace in order to experience it. And then we get caught up in the anxieties of illusion, the fears of illusion. We say, give me peace, and then we're in peace and it's boring. And then we say, give me some excitement, and then it's too much, and then, you know, the bogatiya. So I think it's time for Aarti. Thank you very much.
Thank you.